Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Mama Mama Podcast. How are you, Miss Amy, today?
Looking very pink.
I'm very pink today. I have pink jumper and pink hair.
You do, don't you?
I bought a green tracksuit. I like a light green tracksuit. And
Look like a pea in it.
Work.
No, it's more like pistachio ice cream. It's that kind of green.
You like green. You've got had another pair of green tracksuit bottoms.
I do. I like green. I like a bit of green. But they're not that flattering.
Are they not?
Oh, I've got a low battery. But I'm like, do you know what? I can't be asked to send it back.
What?
They're not terrible. Lola was like, no, they're all right. So I'm like, oh, I'll have that.
Do they give you a bit of camel hoof?
They're just a bit, you can see me double bum.
What double bum?
I've got underneath my bum, the tops of my thighs, like, I've got like a squidge bit.
You haven't. You're such an idiot.
I have. Oh, I'll show you. I'll take a picture and show you.
Oh, my life.
But I'm just like, oh, whatever. Whatever, Trevor. But today, Harry, I have been learning how to do long division and long multiplication the new way.
The new way. What? So
the new way.
So explain for all the thickos that got a U in there.
They start at the front rather than at the back. Like, I'm sure that when we used to do it, we used to work backwards.
Backwards, yeah.
But they start at the front now. I can't. I'm recording. I'm recording. No, we're having dinner. Put them in the fridge. And be quiet. No. I'm too tired. All I can hear is crunching. Please go away. Put them in the fridge. No. No, 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 no. She wants to eat chocolate. We're having dinner in half an hour.
This for your listeners is Amy's Parenting 101 podcast. We are now at the end of the day, so it's...
It's 2 weeks into homeschooling, yeah, and I feel like I'm defeated. That's how I feel today, is I'm defeated. I've not done any work. Because I haven't been able to, because I've been teaching children. Well, apart from the podcast we did this morning, Juno's just told me that her character on Minecraft is a podcaster.
Oh, is it? Aww. Yeah.
Because I want to be like you, Mummy. And I was like, that's not technically my job title, but I'll...
Oh, how's love?
I'll take it.
Oh, bless her.
I was like, But I did one very nice thing that happened today was I made some mince pies for a charity over Christmas, and they sent an email out today just saying thank you, and it really made a difference to the people's Christmases. And I was like, do you know what? That I'll have that, and that's made
you did make 3,555 mince pies, though, to be fair, and they were.
I'm never doing that again.
They were banging. They were.
Yeah, but then you eat them all.
Yeah, no.
Oh my god.
I've got that taste in my mouth of the mince pies, and I had cream because I don't really, I love cream, but I don't really have it in my cupboard unless I'm making a cake or it's Christmas or Easter, bizarrely. But obviously around Christmas, you've always got like a tub of cream. Loved having your mince pies with them. Oh, Juno's at it. Juno!
It's like, what do you... It's like, when I'm on the phone...
I know.
They're having a full-blown fucking conversation with me. I'm like, I'm on the phone. For 5 minutes, I've just said, just be quiet and don't talk to me and don't make a sound for 10 minutes. And it's just... they just have no concept.
They don't. They don't.
Of just be quiet. Like, she's banging the nail polish on the table now.
They don't.
The microphone picks up all sounds. Just.
This is your parenting podcast.
I'm just, that's me. I'm done.
You're done?
How are you?
Done with your children or just done in life?
I'm just done. That's it for the day. Shush.
I know. It is hard. I'm good. I think I'm a little bit like you. I'm really glad that it's Saturday. I'm really glad that it's Sunday coming up because I need to rest. And, excuse me. And I think Idris needs a rest of me not shouting, because I've really refrained from shouting, but just I need a rest from like just trying to multitask and trying to wear so many different hats. It's just quite impossible, because like they can't independently learn themselves. It's just that's not going to happen. I mean, Idris would just sit there and just like try and be a YouTuber. He thinks he's a hacker at the minute. He's like trying to hack into, so I don't know, and I'm like, you're not a hacker, but whatever, yeah. Trevor. But yeah.
It'd be handy if he could hack into that bloke's account who can't remember his Bitcoin password for $180 billion,
do you know what I mean?
Pound or whatever he's got. See if he can do that. That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Do you know what, Amy? Can't even remember the bloody password he gave himself, like that's been the same for the last 2 years. That he's got into for the last 2 years. But when I'm on the most important call of the day, Mum, I've got the masters! I'm like that, and I'm in full swing trying to look all professional. And yeah, no, I'm handling homeschooling. Yeah, homeschooling's great. And then I'm like that, excuse me a minute, on mute. It's just like unleash the tired mother. But you know what? I think you'll get there. I think it's only week two, and we do need to give ourselves a break, and our children as well, because it's so frustrating for them as well.
Yeah.
That's what I always keep thinking. I always keep thinking, you poor fucking sod, having to be taught by me. You fucking poor child. Fuck me. Because I'm not very patient with Idris.
Yeah.
I'm patient with every other kid, but not my own.
It's hard though, and it's hard when you've already done it 15 times and they've done it and then they've forgotten, and it's just like it's a lot. I respect teachers.
What I find really funny is they've got those things that says more or fewer.
Fuck
me, could he just write a neat little line? Could he just, no, he's fucking crossed the, like, he almost, like, covered the page. And then I said, but I wanted it to say fewer, and I went, well, you've crossed out the fewer, and now I can't see the fewer. And he's like, oh, so you don't need, you don't need to fucking colour in the page, Idris. You just need to write, because we're so used to, like, writing on lines, like, everything's neat, like me, this lot. Don't
but
care.
They start, they've got like a box to write in, and they start right at the bottom in really big hand. You've got four words to write.
I know! Write in the box! That's what I said. Write in the box! Why don't you write in the box? And it's just like that. You okay, Mum? I'm fine. Oh, gosh. Well, ranting on about homeschooling, which is delightful. We've got an amazing guest today, haven't we?
We have. This podcast is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
She's so funny and so fucking amazing with what she's accomplished as well.
Yeah.
Fighting the good fight.
Fighting the good fight, she continues to. And I think that just says everything about Naomi, because she does things that she doesn't even... Like, she doesn't talk about it. She doesn't talk about how brilliant she is. She just does it, which is the mark of somebody who's doing it for the right reason. But, yeah, I forgot how funny she was.
Yeah.
I forgot. She's hilarious. No. Love her.
Yeah, she is. She's really lovely. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. And read all about it, because it's going on. Like, what she talks about is not just a one-off. It is happening elsewhere around the UK. So it might resonate with other people as well. But yeah. Hit us up. Let us know what you think. Hashtag Mum and Mama Pod. at Mama Mama Pod, Twitter Mama Mama Pod cast. Don't know why I'm anymore.
Mama.
That's what I am all day anyway.
Oh, I'll see you later. We'll see you on the other side. Mom. I can't say anymore.
Mom.
Right, enjoy.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Work.
So, welcome to the Mum and Mama podcast. I am Mum.
And I'm Mama.
There we go. She got it after a whole fucking year.
Yeah,
and we are joined by the wonderful, amazing, and very beautiful, I have to say, Naomi, who is somebody I know from Pembrokeshire very well. We went to school together. Although you were a few years below me, weren't you?
That's right. I'm, you know, so much younger than you. That's right.
What are you? So not so much, Naomi. Not so much. Maybe one or two. How old are you?
40.
Oh, see, it's not that young, is it?
No, it is not.
You look really young.
You do. I bathe in gin.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it must be fresh air.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. The fresh air. Yeah.
The fresh air. And it must be, you've got how many children? Two children?
Three.
You've got three kids and you look 15. How is this skin you're bathing in?
Oh, my God.
God, guys, you can't see me properly. It's the light. It must be the light.
It's definitely not. But Naomi, we got Naomi on today because I really wanted to highlight some of the things that are going on in Pembrokeshire, which is obviously where I'm from. And I think over the last year, I've had some contact with you about everything. And what I find really fascinating is that they've made it really personal about you as well in certain respects in your family. Mm-hmm. So really, I want to, because I mean, you've got a really an amazing career as well, which is obviously, you know, in the arts and creative industry, which at the moment has been decimated. But obviously, you know, I do want to highlight your really good work in Pembrokeshire and highlighting so many things. Like, I love your Facebook posts. I think you're like a one. You remind me of my mum, who in Pembrokeshire was like so instrumental in, like, you know, the Ora Emulsion. She did the Ora Emulsion march. She wanted to go to prison because she didn't want to pay a poll tax. Like, there's so many things that she kind of rallied against, and you're somebody like that. So myself and Amy, we're just going to have a little chat with you today and see what's been going on.
Excellent, thank you. What an honour to be compared to your mum. Your mum's a legend, so I'll take that. Thank you.
She's a drunken legend.
So am I, that's why it's fine.
So
So tell us about your job, first of all, what you do.
So my job is, I'm team coordinator with National Theatre Wales. So team is National Theatre Wales sort of engagement branch of the company. So we work in communities throughout Wales and internationally, building up people's skills within the arts and giving opportunities for people who otherwise might think that the arts aren't for them. So the sort of driving force behind everything we do is this idea of social change and using creativity to make real tangible change within communities and within individuals.
Wow.
And so that's cool. I enjoy doing that. And then I do a bit of writing of plays on the side.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Can you put me and Amy in a play? Amy did acting as well, didn't you, Amy?
I did it at university, but then I didn't do anything after.
Let's write one together. Come on, we can do this.
She can sing as well.
Well, Mum and Mum of the Musical.
She can sing. I'll just be in the background drunk.
Amazing. It's so
Amy's teetotal.
And that's why she looks so good.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So how long have you been doing your role for? A long time?
Yeah, a while now. So I was an English teacher for a long time, and then I did a master's in script writing, and that sort of propelled me into the world of theatre. And then, so I've been in this job for about 5 years.
Oh my God, so you did a master's? How many children did you have when you did that master's?
I was pregnant with the first one, and I gave birth to him 2 months into the course, and then I handed in my final piece 3 weeks before giving birth to the second one.
Are you being serious?
Yes. And I had to do the graduation breastfeeding. I had to breastfeed him in my cap and gown.
Oh my God. How long were you doing it for?
It was a 2-year course.
So you had them close together then?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Irish twins.
So, yeah, basically.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's basically, yeah, I mean, it gave me something to do, you know, while I was
gave you something to do
in your masters. Oh. If I'm consuming enough, I'll just have
a kid and then I'll just do my masters.
And I was still teaching as well. I don't know what was the problem with me. I had more energy then.
Oh, I bet you did. Oh my God. So what, because obviously some communities in Wales are very, like, they're very geared up to the creative industries, but some are just not, and they think that the arts are, you know, for a load of kind of middle class white people.
Yes.
Do you find that quite a difficult bridge?
It can be, because I think the art scene in Wales is so different to England in that, I think our perceived ideas of arts and culture growing up in Wales is that it's, you know, posh people swanking about on a stage, and that it's not for us, it's not for the likes of us.
Yeah.
We grow up on a diet of community pantomimes and variety shows and, you know, working men's clubs and all of that, which are really valid and brilliant ways of bringing the community together. So, you know, that whole thing of pantomime is, I know on the face of it, cheesy and wouldn't be considered highbrow, but what an amazing way to bring all sorts of different elements of the community
together. Totally.
And that's where I think the heart of Welsh arts lies, in celebrating what people can do and what people are able to make beautiful things together. So it's a tricky one, because you hear the word national, you hear the word theatre, immediately people go, oof, that's not for me.
Don't want it.
That's not for me, because it doesn't speak to them. So it's with team, it's a lot of that breaking down those barriers and making people realise that actually the arts isn't for everybody. It's a human right to be able to have access to and participate in the arts.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And just to enable people to understand that it's just a bit of fun and a way to express yourselves and be, sadly now, COVID has fucked this up, but before it was a real good sell to be able to say to people, it's just a really good way to hang out with each other, to meet be part of something collectively together. And I think that's the most rich thing that the arts
can.
Do you do all ages?
Sorry?
Is it all ages?
Yeah, all ages. So we've done work with, we do some work in like, you know, primary schools and secondary schools. And we did a really cool project in the pupil referral unit in Pembroke Dock where we worked with them for 2 months, no, 2 terms. And they made an album of original music and did their own videos and they organised their own album launch and it was wicked. And this amazing woman, Mollera, from a band called Zion Train, I don't know if you remember them from years ago, but she led it. It was fantastic. And Wayne Boucher worked on it. Remember Wayne?
Oh, yeah, I remember Wayne.
Yeah, and the kids just absolutely loved it. Now, these are kids who've been expelled from mainstream education and completely disconnected from sort of learning experience. So to see them fully engaged in something that was 2 whole terms long, it was properly transformative. And one of the girls has since gone on to perform at Narberth a cappella festival. She's like recorded her own music video. One of the boys is now DJing locally. It's like,
oh, that's amazing.
So little things like that do actually make a massive difference.
They do, because it's about getting into their inner kind of core of, you know, because I guess they got chastised at our pros in the where I work in Haringey. You know, they're just considered the naughty kids, so we won't give them anything. We won't give them anything nice because they're naughty. Yeah. And it's like, God, you've really got to turn it on its head and actually give them all the nice stuff, so that, you know, some people might gravitate to sports, some might gravitate to the arts, some might gravitate to music, but there'll be something that somebody takes out of it somewhere.
Yeah.
And it'll transform them and it'll make them feel special and wanted and listened to. Yeah. A lot of these kids are just, you know, they've got no access to that one-to-one conversation because nobody hears them. So they just make issues and problems for the simple reason they want to be heard.
That's exactly it. And it's a tragedy that this, you know, mainstream school system isn't for everybody. It doesn't suit everybody.
No.
Doesn't just, you know, you can't expect to fit every single, you know, peg into those holes, because we're all individuals with individual needs and different ways of learning. And so oftentimes these kids just simply didn't fit. It's nothing.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not about them being naughty or about them being sent for prison or about them being just, you know, unteachable. It's the system doesn't work for them. But then when you're engaged in something like that. And we did one in Cardiff as well, in a PRU here, and that was equally brilliant. You know, you really do see a change, and that's what I love.
Yeah.
And then we also work with, you know, people of all ages in all places, and we're doing a big project in Pembrokeshire at the moment, which is supposed to be being staged next year. And we're doing another one in Wrexham around homelessness. We work quite a lot with the homeless community as well.
Oh, wow. God, you sound like you've got an amazing, perfect job.
Yeah, I love
it. Yeah. It sounds like you can see by the smile on your face that you're happy doing it.
Yeah.
Happy being that person. But we'll move on. We'll move on.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Well, it's actually disgraceful, to be honest. But we'll hand it over to you to explain kind of the full history behind what's happened.
Okay.
It's unbelievable, really.
It is really.
Go for it.
Okay, so a lockdown happened, and I think a lot of people became far more active on their social media pages. I think people became emboldened by that sense of hiding behind the keyboard and feeling that they could say whatever they liked. That was just a general feeling going around everyone, I think. Coupled with that, the inevitable divisions that Brexit has caused and all sorts of ripple effects of the COVID happening, you know, and within this Tory government, you're seeing divisions left, right and centre. Mm. So that's the kind of world we're in when this story starts to unfold in Pembrokeshire. So I was just scrolling through my Facebook one night, near the start of the pandemic, and I saw that a county councillor, Josh Bainan, who's lovely, young, progressive county councillor working really hard in Pembroke Dock, had been getting all sorts of homophobic abuse for taking a stand against racism, which I found disgusting. And it seemed to me that every time Josh opened his mouth about anything, there was this army of people waiting in the wings to just slam into him with homophobic abuse, which I found absolutely disgusting. So I've got that on the one hand. I'm thinking I need to step in here because I know Josh, and this is just not right.
This is not good.
If I didn't know Josh, I would be appalled by this, you know?
Yeah.
I need to defend this boy. So, you know, there's a furious little ping, ping, ping back and forth on social media. Then Josh made a statement that he believed County Hall should be lit in solidarity with the Black movement. So he believed it should be lit in purple. There were so many of us who totally agreed with him, and really, it didn't seem like a big deal.
No.
County Council said, fine, it's going to cost us hardly anything to change the gels in the lights. What's the big deal? And it's like Pembrokeshire, which isn't particularly multicultural, it felt like a really bold and important statement to be making.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, good on you, Josh. Well, the backlash he received for that, I can't even... It was just disgraceful. It was the worst possible stuff. He ended up having to report swathes of it to the police because everything was the worst homophobic abuse. I mean, I can't even repeat it. It was so bad.
No, I've seen some of it, and some of it is horrific.
Yeah. Then you've got this county councillor, Paul Dowson, who's a county another county councillor for Pembroke Dock Ward, who was quite vocally against the idea of County Hall being lit in purple, and made that very clear. For a number of reasons, which I would argue are racist.
Yeah.
How you can be opposed to it and stand up in opposition to it in the first place is astounding to me.
Yeah.
But then his reasons for it kept shifting and changing according to the wind, it felt like. One minute it was because it was too expensive.
Yeah.
Then he was told it costs a fiver. then it was because he didn't want to be seen to be... advocating the violence of the protest.
That's it, yeah.
When then people said to him, you know, that's an actually ridiculous argument because that's not where we're lighting it. We're not advocating the violence. We're standing in solidarity with the people that are fighting for this
group. Yeah.
That argument fell flat on his face. And then he tried again. Another argument was that it hadn't been voted through in chamber.
Yeah.
But then I think that was shot down in flames because they don't vote through lighting it. They didn't vote through lighting it for the NHS. They didn't vote through lighting it for Remembrance Day. So every single attempt at him painting this as not being racist was just thrown back. And at the end of it all, he had very little to go on. Then.
So he got tough, didn't he, at this point?
Yeah.
He started
to get really, really arsy. He got a lot of his friends to start giving Josh grief and whoever stood up for Josh grief.
Yeah.
Then, one merry evening, I'm looking at Facebook and I see a post from Peter Krause, who has been a town council in Pembroke Dock for a very long time and was mayor of Pembroke Dock. He had posted a picture of a group of men at the Baltimore protests on top of a car next to a picture of a group of monkeys ripping a car apart at a safari park.
Yeah.
So I was just, my gasket went and I noticed alongside this photograph, Paul Dowson had commented saying, look out, mate. You better take this down. The lefties will be after you now. Ha ha ha.
Oh my God. So
they were. It was very clear what he was doing with that image. And it was very clear that Paul Dowson thought it was funny and was endorsing it in some respect.
Yeah.
So I'd screenshot it, the image and the comment.
Yep.
And I put it on Facebook underneath the headline, "Welcome to Pembroke Dock, where your local town and county councillors are outwardly racist."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
they like that.
It's not like that. but the national press did.
Good.
So within about 12 hours, it was in the Western Telegraph, which is the local paper. It was in the Western Mail. It was on Work Online. It was in the Independent. It was in the Daily Mail.
It was at their front page, though, the Daily Mail.
On BBC News. Daily Mail's new front page. They were totally for it. But yeah, it just went mental.
Wow.
Yeah.
It did. But that's because that because people wouldn't ordinarily see it and not say anything.
Yeah.
They wouldn't like it. They might not like it, but they wouldn't say anything, because I think when you're in a place like Pembrokeshire, your county councillors are those in authority. The mayor is somebody in authority.
Yeah.
So you kind of look up to them and you think, oh, well, you know, well, just leave it. I mean, before you move on, wasn't there a mayor that was convicted for paedophilia and his picture was still standing in the chambers? And the local councillors refused to take it down for quite a while before that it met backlash, and then they took it down.
Yes.
But this is the sort of thing that you're dealing with. You're not dealing with a local authority that's kind of, it's very stuck in the ages. So
it is.
So what happened then after?
Yeah.
Who was I to know that I had so many journalist friends on Facebook that might escalate this? So it all went mental for a little bit.
Yeah.
Peter Crouse resigned from Pembroke Town Council as a result of it all.
Good.
Because he,
good.
Well, what he did was he shot himself in the foot, you see, because first of all, he claimed when the story broke, after I posted it, he claimed that he'd been hacked, that someone had hacked his account. And then it became very clear very quickly that that was bullshit. And then he was forced to apologise. So the story broke then in the afternoon where he's apologising, saying, oh no, I wasn't hacked. It was just a joke. So, you know, what was it, Peter? Are you lying? Yeah,
which one?
Which one? You know, so whichever way we look at it, you've lied.
Yeah.
Also, come on, time to go. So he resigned, but Paul Dowson then, all sorts of stuff started to come out of the woodwork about him, and he was firing off at all cylinders, furious that, you know, there'd been this sort of surge of people power in opposition to views that he obviously shares with Peter Crouse.
Yeah.
I saw on somebody's Facebook page that they posted a post of his from 2016. So that's just before he got elected onto the county council. So unfortunately, posts that he made on Facebook pre-county council can't be investigated by the ombudsman and can't be held to account.
Yeah.
But it existed and it was there. And this was only 4 short months before he was elected to county council. So unless in those 4 months he had some sort of complete road to Damascus moment or some sort of full frontal lobotomy, I would argue he's probably still the same person that he was then. Anyway, this post, it was something about his business where he wouldn't employ, and he listed all of the types of people that he
employ. Yeah.
It was absolutely just disgusting. I'm not going to say the words because they're just so offensive. The descriptions that he used, he kind of showed in that post that he was every sort of ist it was possible to be.
Yeah.
There was like homophobic slurs in there. There were outright racism, Islamophobia, sexism. Yeah, it went on and on and on and on.
Oh yeah, that's it. He had a big thing about women, didn't he? Being in power.
Yeah. You showed me that post, Harry.
Yeah, like, I did.
This is our councillors. Oh yeah, it was absolutely.
It's like out of a film, though. It could be a film.
I know.
Like the most offensive things that someone could say about everyone, and then that was that post.
That's it, exactly. Like, think of the very worst things you could say about every single group of people.
Other than men.
There we go.
Well, straight men.
Yeah. Yeah, apart from straight men, obviously, because they're the lads. Oh, a straight white man.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I sort of, this girl had shared this already. So all I did was share what she had already shared. Well, bugger me. He went apoplectic. So, yeah, next go around, I'm getting, who does this chiffy woman think she is?
That's it, chiffy woman.
Yeah, and that became a thing then that was going around. Everyone was laughing, calling me that chiffy woman.
What is that?
That's her last name.
And he's just doesn't know me at all, so I was like an unknown entity to him.
Right, yeah.
So I just sort of said, well, yeah, where's that chiffy woman's proof that I'm outwardly racist, is what he said. And I said, here's that chiffy woman's proof that you're outwardly racist, and presented that post back to him.
Yeah.
And then, well, there. That was the start of a long line then of him getting really personal and really nasty and getting his friends involved. And
that's just outrageous. Didn't he do something to your dad or your family?
Yeah, so he mentioned, so he said something about the Peter Krause incident. He said, don't you feel bad for what you've done to Peter Krause? I said, no. He said, oh, but he's been through so much. He lost his son in the last 2 years, and this sort of thing could really push him over the edge. Imagine if he was your dad, and he was pushed to this point, you know. So I found that very dark and sinister because two reasons. I'm very sorry that Peter Krause lost his son. I was in school with his son. He was in the same year.
Yeah.
I went all through school with him, and I think it's tragic that he lost his life.
Yeah.
That's the full stop to that.
Yeah.
But I still think what he posted was not a direct result of his grief, but was a result of his actual racist
thoughts. Yeah. Of how he thinks.
Yeah. You know, his page is full of things about Lee Rigby and Gollywogs and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think you can twin the two together, and I think it was very wrong of Paul Dowson actually to do that.
Yeah.
But then when he said about imagine that this, you know, that he was already emotionally fragile and imagine you pushed him over the edge, that is dark because my dad took his own life. So to reference my dad within that and in that context is really So I said to him, I can only assume from this that you have figured out who I am and that you know full well that my dad took his own life.
That's fucking outrageous. That's fucking awful.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, I know lots of your family members quite well, actually, but I didn't realise this about your dad. Well, I just said, look, if you knew who my dad was, if you were a county councillor with your soul, you would have known exactly who my dad was. He was very well known, as Harrod knows. He was very well known by everybody in Pembroke. And if he knew any of my family members, he would know exactly what happened to my dad. So the fact that he tried to worm his way out of it, he's just a snake.
Yeah.
And he then, you know, I wasn't going to back down, and I haven't backed down. I found out that he was on the board of governors for the school that Harry and I both went to. Well, that riled me. So I got a solicitor friend and an academic, both of whom went to the same school, and we sat down and we wrote a letter, quite a long letter, with the help of another friend who's in Spain. And then we got lots of people to sign it.
And he's no longer the governor.
No longer on the board of governors.
You.
Oh, I can't bear it. It's just not right. I don't understand it because he was just being so awful to so many people. And he, you know, anybody that criticised him, and he was particularly cruel to any sort of young female.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah, strangely leaving men alone. But young females, he would get really dark, really personal very quickly. Really tough. So, you know, this has all blown up into something massive now that's, you know, the unions have been investigating him, Stand Up to Racism, taken a stance against him. Lots and lots of people have made multiple complaints to the Ombudsman about him because he's just been firing off on all cylinders to everybody. It's, you know, me. When you look at what he was like with me, that seems small fry compared to some of the things he's done to people. And I just think it's an absolutely incredible that he's still on the county council.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah.
So then you've got all of this happening, all of this shitstorm where you're seeing some of the, you know, these views that otherwise wouldn't get an airing.
Yeah.
Platformed by the likes of him, where people feel emboldened to say, to have pictures of themselves doing the Nazi salute on their profile picture and be buddies with him, to have, make really dark comments about, you know, other human beings.
Born
out of their own ignorance. I mean, what is it with people who are massively racist and bigoted, and why can't they ever spell? Because it's incredible. Like, it really pisses me off. If you can't be that out about things, at least write it down properly.
Just fucking spell it properly.
Especially if you're making comment, derogatory comments about foreigners coming over here, taking jobs. Yeah, because they can fucking speak English better than you. Anyway. Then all of this is happening. The whole of Pembrokeshire has gone into some sort of nuts chaos around race. And then the Home Office decides to put a group of asylum seekers in a disused army camp in the middle of Canali, which is a stone's throw from the jewel in the crown of Pembrokeshire, Tenby, and is in a very small village,
500
people, which has absolutely no infrastructure to be able to support the complexities of the needs of the men, at a time as well when racism could be more rife.
But it wasn't just a small group, was it? It was a large group. 250
is the max they can have there. It got up to 234.
Fuck my life.
So there's nearly as many people, well, it's nearly half the population
of the village,
The village. Anyway, how are they going to support another 200?
Well, very good question. I think the government don't want us to be able to support them, I think.
It's
part of the hostile environment policy.
Okay.
Very clearly being played out in Pinali.
Yeah.
A very, very obvious textbook way. So what happened was that it was sort of a rumour on Facebook that had happened in 2016 and then had been dismissed. So when the rumour resurfaced, a lot of people just sort of, including myself, just went, oh, it's such an old story.
Yeah.
But then, of course, people started saying all sorts of horrendous, horrible things about asylum seekers, all kind of born out of xenophobia, or racism, or just generally not understanding the terminology even, or what any of it means, you know, the differences between asylum seeker, refugee, migrant. So all of these horrible, horrible views are coming out again. Here we go again. And then it turns out not to be a rumour, but to be true. And within a fortnight, the first men were brought to the camp. Now, obviously, Wales is a nation of sanctuary. We have a duty to help and support people wherever we can. And I totally welcome them. And I said I will do whatever I can to help when they're here. But it isn't suitable because the camp is absolutely horrible.
These
have been through the most horrendous trauma and have been shipped from pillar to post and now ending up without any sort of warning taken out of a hotel in Bristol or London or Cardiff or wherever they are being held, to this camp in the middle, in the arse end of nowhere, which is grim. It basically looks like a load of Anderson shelters, which are riddled with asbestos. Yeah. It's cold. The whole place is kind of run around with barbed wire. It looks like a prison.
Oh my God.
It's absolutely appalling. They have to sleep in like dormitories of six to a dorm. They've all come from all over the place. I don't mean, you know, globally. I mean, as well, within this country, they haven't all just sort of been in the same hotel together and got moved here. So they get moved and moved and moved and moved. So what on earth is that supposed to do to them, especially with the lack of information, especially with the conditions being as they are? They have to queue outside in the wind and the rain for 45 minutes to get the food because the canteen isn't big enough to hold all of the people that are there. So they have to do it on a rotation.
Oh my God.
I mean, the whole thing is just has not been thought through at all. They didn't make for a change of usage for the camp in the first place, so the proper risk assessments were done. They didn't consider the fact that Tembe Surgery, which is the closest doctor surgery, is run by locums only. So the cottage hospital has been shut down, so we've got very limited service there.
Yeah.
They didn't consider the fact that this camp is a good 30-minute walk into town. And what are the men supposed to do? They, you know, what are they supposed to do on a daily basis? What are they supposed to do for their the complexity of their mental health needs?
Yeah.
The imam is in Milford Haven, which is like 40 minutes far away. That's like, it's just insane. Nobody's considered the needs of the men at all. And nobody's considered the impact on the community. It's caused such division within the community. You know, friendships have been severed because of it.
Yeah.
There are people whose gardens back directly onto the camp, who they're mostly pensioners or widows, and they are understandably concerned because they believe what they hear in right-wing press that they read. You know, this is a Tory voting area, so you've got those sort of views.
Yeah.
And nobody's done anything to reassure them or to try and create some sort of sense of unity between the men in the camp and the people living immediately outside. You've got all of these volunteer groups that have sprung up now, which is amazing. And people have been absolutely brilliant, you know, offering English lessons and art lessons and music lessons and taking them out for days out and bringing them clothes and blankets and shoes, and because they haven't got adequate provision in the camp. And, you know, even to keep them warm, they're the basic. So people have done all of that on a voluntary basis and are continuing to do it. You know, we had 4,000 offers of help in about a week, which was incredible. And that's brilliant. And you see the very best of people there, and you see real, you know, genuine, welcoming, lovely side. But why should people have to do that on a, why should it take like a groundswell of volunteers to come do that? Why isn't the infrastructure being considered? Yeah. Why hasn't that support system and then that been put in place in the first place? You know, they say it's a COVID response thing, but I don't believe that to be entirely true.
No, I don't either.
But the biggest thing for me, the worst of it all, is that it's brought out these fascists. That is the only way I can describe them.
Yeah.
It's encouraged fascism into the community, and that is the one thing that I am opposed to. I would rather have a camp of 1,000 asylum seekers and figure out what we can do to help them than one fascist roaming around the village.
Didn't they come from like Swansea and Cardiff?
They came from everywhere.
Yeah.
So a Facebook group was set up, which was set up by a local man who had reservations about the camp, born of his own experiences. He himself was in an open prison, and he just said, look, when you put 250 odd men together in a space like that, you are going to get trouble. Couple that with the fact that of all of the stuff they've been through and the fact that we're here to help them, I'm just really worried about how this is going to pan out.
Yeah.
You know, some of the things that he was saying I didn't agree with. And in the group, there were lots of comments that I found offensive. So I went and spoke to him. And I just said, look, you just need to be really careful because there are really valid questions that need to be asked here about whether we can support this. But if you continue to allow racist voices, bigoted voices and fascist voices to have a platform within your group, none of those concerns are going to be taken seriously. Mm. So you need to get rid of those guys first and then let's talk. I'm happy to help you with this, but I'm not going to have anything to do with those guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, it took some doing because the group had gone from sort of 300 relatively concerned locals to 3,000 full-on fascists from all over Britain. So we're talking, you know, BNP, EDL, this group calling themselves the Voice of Wales, which is like the Welsh version of they're all like Tommy Robinson wannabes.
Yeah.
All of these citizen journalists coming along claiming that they speak for the people and only they care about the British people and all of this nonsense. They were suddenly all here. And it was horrific. So fair play, this guy that set up the group originally said, I don't want to be associated with those people. That's terrible.
Yeah.
He shut the group down immediately, had quite a public spat with the leader of this Voice of Wales and said, I don't want anything to do with you. No way. He's like, this group is supposed to be for local people who've got real concerns about things like healthcare and all the rest of it. And I'm not interested in your racism, which I thought was great. Yeah. But it's been a big battle to get out those far-right voices, and it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
Every weekend, whenever Stand Up to Racism organise like a welcoming party or any sort of protest at the camp, the fascists appear. They are persistent in their hatred and bigotry, and the worst of it all is that they've recruited some local people being their voice pieces down here, which I find horrific. We have Neil Hamilton come down to one of the protests. Neil bloody Hamilton, I thought he was dead. Turns out he's alive and he's a bloody Welsh Assembly member for UKIP.
What?
He lives in Wiltshire. What? He's got fuck all to do with words. I don't understand it at all. Anyway, he came down to show stand in solidarity with these Voice of Wales and the far right protests. Guess who's the new poster boy for the Voice of Wales and the far right group?
Our friend
Paul Dowson. So he was there on the biggest main protest, the most ugly one, right at the start of all of this. He was there to show support for the lads. He's since been interviewed on Voice of Wales YouTube channel like 3 or 4 times. It's disgusting. It is truly, truly disgusting. Because
and what I find like deeply disturbing, and it's what I think about all the time, is if you're I get quite upset actually, because if you're somebody who's in that camp and you see that outside, can you imagine how it must feel?
Exactly.
It must be soul destroying to have to live in that environment.
They don't want to fuck
then me. Yeah, but then have fucking, you know, all that lot outside chanting, shouting racial slurs. Mm-hmm. About going home, you know, go back and all the rest of it. And you're here, like, it's just, it makes me really sad.
It is, it's just the worst possible, I mean, it's just the worst possible thing, because they have no empathy, no compassion, no consideration. I can't imagine ever being in a position where I would feel like that about another human being that I don't know and have never got to know or don't understand, just being that vile towards them.
Yeah
for no reason other than my own bigotry and hatred.
Yeah,
it's grim. And you know, these men, they didn't want to come to Pinhali. Who the fuck was Pinhali? I know I live there. Beautiful. There's nothing to do.
There isn't anything to do. There's no public transport. There's nothing. There's no, is there a shop? Is there a village shop?
Shop.
That's it, isn't it? There's no pub.
There's two pubs and a village shop.
How have they? Who authorised it?
Home Office.
How has this happened? How has this ever been a good idea? I don't understand.
A good question.
Or are they literally just doing it to? Well,
the Home Office are doing it because they claim that because of coronavirus that they've got a backlog now, because there was a system where when an asylum seeker first enters the country and they're having their asylum claim assessed, they are held in an emergency accommodation first.
Yeah.
Then they move to an initial assessment centre. Now that initial assessment centre is usually in an area of major conurbation, like, you know, a city centre that has lots of different facilities nearby to help them with their claims or to help them with their needs, none of which we've got. And then once that initial assessment process has been completed, which is usually takes about a month to 6 weeks, then they move on to the next place. So that's when they get told they're either an official asylum seeker and then they can move on to the next stage of the game, or their asylum claim hasn't been successful and they're going to have to be moved on to a different place completely. So they're saying, the Home Office is saying, that because of coronavirus, that emergency accommodation bit is being sort of clogged up. Because before, if you're in the initial assessment centre and your asylum claim isn't verified, then I think they just kind of evict you, just send you on your merry way, but they can't do that with coronavirus. So there's like this ripple effect where there's just this backlog of everything.
So what?
I still think it's bullshit, though.
I know it does. It sounds like bullshit, if I'm honest with you, because it just sounds like they needed to house, you know, they're just thinking about the numbers and, you know, get them out, ship them out, get them somewhere.
They want to make it as uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah.
The whole hostile environment thing, isn't it? Make it as difficult and unpleasant for them as possible, so that eventually they just want to leave of their own volition, which is just insane and cruel beyond belief.
And the guys in the camp now have obviously tried to fight back, haven't they, in a sense? They've tried to set their own kind of group up to counteract some of the comments, which you would. You would, that's what you would do. But now that's now seen as, that's that conflict starting with both, three sides, actually. You know, because you've obviously got the people in Penally as well, and like you're one of them. And
I feel really, really sorry for the men in the camp, because ultimately they do not want to be there. I admire them massively, because what they've done is set up their own union within the camp, which I think is no mean feat.
Yeah.
Quite an incredible thing to have done. You know, last week the men themselves just said, look, we appreciate everything that you guys are doing. We appreciate the clothes. We appreciate the offers of English lessons. We appreciate it all. But ultimately, all we really want is not to be here and for this to be shut down, because it's so horrific.
Yeah.
Do you think that will happen? Do you think it will be shut down or just not?
I hope so. I think it's a tricky one for me. Like, the men themselves last week staged their own protest. They went outside, they made banners.
Yeah, I saw that.
I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I did.
What I would like is for the camp to be shut down on humanitarian grounds.
Yeah.
And for the men to be housed in, you know, hotels or homes, preferably.
Yeah.
Still happening, because they're not prisoners. They haven't done anything wrong, and yet they're kept as though they're in a prison.
Yeah.
You know, they've had persecution and war and disaster and all sorts of unimaginable shit. And okay, there may be one or two there who aren't valid, who are trying, they may be, but I would say that the vast majority aren't.
And how long is it since the camp has been used? Is it it's something ridiculous, isn't it? Like,
well, the camp hasn't been used for regular training for years.
It's like 15-20 years in it, or something.
They occasionally have like CAs or cadets go up for like a weekend, but it isn't equipped to hold people
there
for a length of time. I think they're only ever there for like a week or a fortnight max.
And that's part of their training, I would kind of argue. It's the training to be, you know, to be self-sufficient and to, you know, weather the elements and to understand that that's what might happen if you're out on the field of duty, but not for 230-240 men who need home comforts and need support and need wraparound care.
Exactly, they do
need a shower. Like, isn't the shower something like in a ridiculous part of the camp?
Yeah, and they are communal showers.
Fuck my life.
They've got washing machines that keep breaking all of the time. So the few items of clothing that they do have, they're often having to wash them by hand in sinks in this freezing cold weather. They have like plug-in heaters for the rooms, which hardly ever work effectively. They don't have enough blankets. I mean, it's just hell on earth in there. And so, on humanitarian grounds, I believe it should be shut.
Yeah.
I know that there are a number of legal teams fighting that.
Okay.
And I really hope that something comes of it. What I would hate, though, is for the far right to believe that in any way, shape or form...
They've won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They... what I would like is for the guys to be moved to somewhere like a hotel or somewhere like a like homes.
Yeah.
So we can say, actually, you haven't won at all.
Yeah.
No. Because there's absolutely, because there's Syrian families in Haverford West that my mum talks about all the time. And I think there was like how many families? Like is it 6 or 7 Syrian families in Haverford West?
Yeah.
And they've worked so well adjusted. They have their own like pop-up restaurant, one's got opening a restaurant. I mean, like there's so many amazing opportunities you can have by that.
I think the other thing as well, though, that upsets me is that it is an initial assessment centre.
Yeah.
I would rather it were something longer term.
Yeah.
At least then you get a chance to actually really get to know each other. They can really feel a part of the community. And who knows, maybe be able to settle. But it feels like making it an initial assessment centre just further adds to the hostility and fear, because you don't know if they're going to be there for 6 weeks, 4 weeks.
No.
They don't know. And so how can they commit to getting really involved in the community? And
yeah.
And fixing it up as well, fixing up the camp and making it, you know, somewhere that is a bit nicer to be. Bloody hell. I'm sure, Naomi, that we will get you back on to talk about the next stage. I think you've been amazing. I've loved having you on today.
Oh, thanks, guys. It's been lush to be here. Thank you so much for asking me. I'll fill you in with round two of whatever happens. Yeah.
You're very funny as well.
Oh, thanks, mate.
You're very, very amusing.
Thank you for making a difference.
Aww. Yeah, definitely.
I always tell my girls that you have to stand up for people, because sometimes they can't stand up for themselves, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, that is what.
And when I take Amy to Wales, we'll meet up.
Yes, come on. Me and you can get pissed and she can carry us home.
Result.
And everything, I'm fine.
Right. Thank you very much, my darling. And we will definitely get you back on. And have a beautiful day. But we'll let you know when we air it. It's been amazing. Thank you, darling.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Is it Mum? Mum, and what it is when they're both doing it at the same time. Like, I'm helping Lola, and then Juno's like, Mum, and then just goes. It's like she's not even like Mum and waits for me to say, yes, Juno. She's like, Mum. So Christopher Columbus, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I'm trying to do this.
That Christopher Columbus is quite difficult, like, especially for Idris.
He's Italian. He was Italian. I thought he was Spanish.
No, he's Italian.
But
it
just then
starts to ask me about slavery. Oh, still recording.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what Juno's like. He's a bad man. He had slaves, like, and I'm like, yes.
Like in the middle of work, I'm going, oh my god. I've got to like now sit down and.
That's a whole big conversation, isn't it?
Massive.
But it's good. It's so good. Like what you said the other day when Idris said about him discovering South America. And he's like, but people already lived there. And I was like, yes, because that's what Lola said when Juno was talking about it. And I'm like, it's so good that at such a young age, they're questioning what they're being taught about history, because a lot of it is extremely biased. And, you know, they don't get the full story, do they?
No.
Anyway, we're going to stop moaning.
Yeah.
Big up yourselves. Thank you for listening. Please share this podcast because it's an important one, and we would like a lot of people to hear it.
We definitely would.
We'll post the links to what she's doing as well. Alright, well, big love.
Big love.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.